December 2013. A two-year-old boy named Emil plays near a hollow tree in Meliandou, Guinea, while his mother washes clothes nearby. Inside the tree, small bats, what locals call flying mice, hang in the darkness. Children sometimes hunt these bats, smoking them out and roasting them over fires. Emil is too young to hunt, but perhaps he touches one. Perhaps he tastes something. Perhaps bat blood or urine finds its way onto his skin. Whatever the exact moment, it changes everything. By Christmas Eve, Emil develops black diarrhea. 4 days later, he's dead. Within weeks, his sister, mother, and grandmother follow. The virus, Zaire Ebola virus, capable of liquefying human organs, has emerged from what scientists call the virosphere, that vast ocean of constantly evolving pathogens. It had appeared once before in 1976, killed hundreds in Central Africa, then vanished back into the forest. Now it's back, 2,000 miles away, in a region where Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia converge. Here, the Kissi people move freely across borders, and recent deforestation has created new contact zones between wilderness and human settlements. A microscopic strand of RNA, just 80 nanometers wide, has found its way from forest to child and is now spreading with terrifying speed. Menendor, a respected traditional healer, kept what villagers believed was a supernatural snake in a chest, the source of her powers. When her neighbor, Siawanda Kanyano, died on March 3, 2014, after Menendor's treatments failed, five sisters washed the body according to tradition. All five died within weeks. Menendor continued treating patients, but none recovered. By late March, she too fell ill. Her funeral in early April became what scientists would later describe as the first instance of a nuclear explosion. Villagers from throughout the region attended, washing and touching her body according to ancient customs. They returned home carrying an invisible enemy. The virus had mutated into variant A82V, Makona, four times better at infecting human cells. A single amino acid change had created a humanized Ebola that spread efficiently among people. Villagers attributed deaths to Menendor's supernatural snake escaping with invisible fangs. This collision between traditional beliefs and biological reality would prove catastrophic. Dr. Hamar Khan could have worked comfortably in America, where his brother lived in Philadelphia. His 91-year-old father had protested when Khan insisted on returning to Sierra Leone to head the Lhasa research program at Kanema Government Hospital. "I can't work in an office, sir," Khan had said. "I have to go out and be a doctor." In May 2014, when the first Ebola case arrived, a 20-year-old woman hemorrhaging around needle punctures, Khan gathered his staff. "Ebola is with us." His deputy, Veronica, began to cry. The Ebola ward, designed for 12 patients, soon held 35. Beds contained two or three people each. Disoriented patients wandered corridors. Corpses accumulated. Nurses worked 12-hour shifts in spacesuits, awaiting promised hazard pay of $3.50 that never came. The tragedy peaked when pregnant nurse Lucy May went into labor while infected. Head nurse Imbalu, Auntie Fani, and three colleagues attempted a breech delivery without anesthetics as blood soaked everything. Lucy died at 9:30 p.m., her colleagues' agonized screams echoing across the hospital. Then the nurses themselves began falling ill. Khan realized the virus was eroding the medical system the way a rising tide washes away a sandcastle. On June 12th, he told his staff, "This is a tough encounter with Ebola. This is a very tough battle." When he spoke of their work as a national sacrifice, staff members wept, understanding some would die. "If you say you will not do the work, who will do it?" Under an electron microscope, Ebola resembles cooked spaghetti, 80 nanometers wide, 1,000 nanometers long, with just six structural proteins and 18,959 letters of RNA. Humans have 3.2 billion, yet this simple structure wields devastating power. A single drop of infected blood contains 100 million viral particles. Unlike HIV, which takes years to destroy immunity, Ebola does it in 7 to 10 days. The virus replicates in virtually every tissue except skeleton and large muscles, targeting blood vessel linings. Symptoms progress like a horror movie: fever and headache, easily mistaken for malaria, then vomiting, diarrhea, abdominal pain. Patients develop blank expressions with reddened eyes. Some experience false recovery before suddenly crashing with tremors and seizures. Final stages bring bleeding from eyes, nose, mouth, blood that fails to clot. What makes Ebola particularly insidious? The sicker patients become, the more contagious they are. A dying patient may have billions of viral particles per milliliter of blood. Any contact with bodily fluids, blood, vomit, diarrhea, sweat, even tears, can transmit infection. Healthcare workers must wear full biohazard suits, creating an alien appearance that terrified communities and complicated containment. In 1976, Sister Beata contracted Ebola in Yambuku, Zaire, while delivering a stillborn child. Within days, she hemorrhaged from multiple orifices as the virus ravaged her body. When Father Germain wiped her bloody tears, he unknowingly infected himself. Both died within days. Dr. Jean-Jacques Muyembe Tamfun discovered the devastating source. The mission hospital reused unsterilized syringes for hundreds of daily injections, while staff traveled by motorbike to distant villages using single needles, effectively seeding the virus throughout the region. Dr. Jean-François Rupal then invoked the ancient rule from a marketplace table in Bamba, a centuries-old local practice for containing smallpox. Suspected cases were isolated in huts outside villages, with food and water forbidden from physical contact. Survivors could return, the dead were burned with their huts. This simple approach, isolate the sick, avoid bodily fluids, safely bury the dead, proved remarkably effective. When international teams arrived weeks later, the outbreak had nearly ended. The people themselves had stopped the virus. This pattern repeated in 2014 when Kisi villagers recognized symptoms and practiced reverse quarantine. As one doctor noted, Ebola outbreaks end when people decide they're going to end. Larry Zeitlin and Kevin Whaley founded MAP Biopharmaceutical in 2003 with a $300,000 grant and salvaged equipment. Their radical approach, growing Ebola antibodies in genetically modified tobacco plants extracted from pureed leaves using food grinders. Gene Olinger at USMRID tested 1,700 mouse antibodies, identifying the most effective ones. By 2009, three teams combined their research to create ZMAP using the three most powerful antibodies. By June 2014, they had produced six courses at $100,000 each. Then came stunning news. ZMAP cured all 18 infected monkeys, even those hours from death, with symptoms reversing in 90 minutes. When Dr. Humar Khan developed Ebola, three ZAP bottles sat in a freezer 100 feet away. International experts urged giving Khan the drug, but Doctors Without Borders faced an agonizing dilemma. How could they give an untested drug to a privileged doctor while other patients received nothing? They feared locals might believe foreigners had killed him if he died. If he survived when others couldn't be saved, it would violate distributive justice. All patients deserve equal access. Despite appeals, they refused. As Khan deteriorated, his deputy Michael Gabaki forced his way in, finding him in filthy clothing. Michael cleaned him. Khan asked for a soft drink, then rest. Later, he managed Michael before his breathing stopped. The revelation that Khan was denied ZAP, which would soon save American patients, caused international outrage. Camp manager Anja Wolf later admitted through tears, "Now, knowing that ZAP works, it was probably the wrong decision." American doctor Kent Brantley was dying in Liberia when ZMAP reached him. His fever hit 105, hemorrhaging severely, too weak to move. He gave his dose to fellow missionary Nancy Reitbull, but as death approached, they split doses. Minutes after infusion, Kent shook violently. His temperature plummeted from 105 to 100 degrees in 15 minutes. After 30 minutes, he sat up. By 9 p.m., he walked to the bathroom, despite only 12% entering his bloodstream. Both Americans survived. The 2014 outbreak claimed over 11,000 lives. Genome sequencing revealed Kenema hospital staff caught Ebola from each other, not patients. Ambulance driver Sar Nyokor received care from nurse Lucy May, who washed his blood, infecting herself. When Lucy died, the virus spread to her caregivers. Dr. Khan died from Lucy's virus, too. Healthcare workers formed a thin, dissolving line of sacrifice between the virus and the rest of humanity. The outbreak revealed how quickly viruses evolve. The A82V Mekona variant was 4 times better at infecting humans, one genetic letter creating a humanized Ebola. The U.S. has only 542 biocontainment beds nationwide. Virologists warn other pathogens pose greater threats, particularly Nipah, causing personality changes and brain liquefaction. If a grain-destroying virus spread like flu, everyone's risk factor would simply be breathing. Yet we have advantages: self-awareness, teamwork, willingness to sacrifice. The question isn't whether another will come, but when, and whether we'll be ready.